This is Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. Late Night with Daryl Morris on Talk Radio.
Hello, good evening. This is Talk Radio. Time for Experts Corner then. And we'll take a trip through the world of gadgets. The gadget detective, Fevzi Turkup, joins us now. Fevzi, hi. Thanks for being with us.
Evening. Pleasure.
We've got some cracking questions. And yours as well, please. 0344 499 1000. Talk and then your message to 87222 if you want to ask Fevzi, who's also known, by the way, as the gadget detective. Right, so serious does he take his task of tracking down, reviewing, understanding, wrapping his head around the best and also decoding the good from the bad when it comes to gadgets, that he is absolutely the man to ask if you've got something you want to know. Firstly, we're going to start with a question from Gareth. He says, I'm looking for a camera phone that's got a really good quality camera, but don't want to have to buy an iPhone, he says. Any suggestions? This is really interesting, isn't it? Because it feels like there'd been a race for a long time to make cameras the very best that they could be on phones. Really, yeah. Extraordinary quality.
So the limitation has been compared... So the camera phones, first of all, have more or less wiped out the sub £100 pocket camera, you know, the actual dedicated camera, because you now need to spend considerably more than £100 to get a camera that is noticeably better than a good camera phone. The difficulty that camera phones have is because they're very slim, the size of the sensor that collects the image once it goes through the lens is necessarily small. But it's quite interesting because now they're using computational photography, the processor, the very fast and powerful processor inside the camera phone, to correct any anomalies by the limitations of the hardware. So a recommendation. So it's a shame you don't want an iPhone, because the new iPhone 13s have probably got the best cameras on any camera phone at the moment. However, that said, if you're looking at the other side of things and you want to go for an Android phone, then Google have themselves launched their two smartphones, their flagship Google Pixel 6 Pro and the much more affordable Google Pixel 6, which actually, although there's about a £300 price difference in them, they're reasonably similar, and the camera on both is very good. So that one is even the cheaper one, though, is around the sort of £450-£500 mark. So we're not talking cheap, but they are incredibly clever. So not only do you have good hardware in there, good lenses, good sensors, and so forth, but Google have done this thing with computational photography. So they've put their own processor in there, which is designed by them and does more than just normal processing. It does artificial intelligence. So you get all these AI type features in there. For example, they've introduced something called Magic Eraser. So when you take a photograph, it will analyze the picture for you, and it will suggest things that you might want to remove from the photo, you know, like the person who photobombed you, or the sign that's sticking up out of the back of your head that you didn't notice when you were taking it. And it will automatically offer to remove those blemishes for you and replace the space behind it with what it thinks would look natural. So it looks at the surrounding areas and makes a guess at what would have been visible behind the person. So it's very clever. Plus, even if it doesn't suggest it, you can just tap on it. So, you know, when a relationship ends badly and there's a particularly good picture of you, but it's got your erstwhile spouse on it, you can just tap her or him and they will disappear. Which, you know, is cheaper.
What? That can't look that good, though, can it?
It's not bad. I mean, you know, I was going to say it's not magic. They do call it the Magic Eraser, but, you know, it makes a reasonable guess. It depends if it was a very detailed background, like inside a room, then it will struggle, but still it won't look ridiculous. But if you're on a beach or something like that, then it will make a pretty good guess of it. So there's a Magic Eraser. There's also Face Unblur. Let's say you're taking a picture of your child's running towards you, the main camera takes a photo, but it's blurred because the child was moving too quickly towards the camera. What it does, Google Pixel 6 and the 6 Pro, they both do this. They'll take two pictures at once. They'll take a high quality, correctly exposed picture with the main camera, and then they'll use an ancillary camera to take a much faster picture, which will tend to give you more grain and more noise in the picture, but the face will be sharp. It then uses AI to take the face from the sharp picture and graft it onto the high quality picture in a way that you can't really tell. So you literally get the best of both worlds. It will also it will also have something called motion mode, where it can intelligently detect what elements and subjects in an image should be sharp while the others making them blurred. It does real tone, which fixes skin tones, and particularly what they've done is they've taken so the way that AI is trained is using a lot of data. So they give it a lot of photographs of something, and then it learns what that something is and how it should look. Traditionally speaking, when companies have been training their AI on human faces, they've used white Caucasian faces, which is one of the reasons why AI can be bad at recognizing black faces, for example. But they've actually done it in a way that actually it will give much better pictures of people with darker skin tones as well. So it's quite clever what they've done. But it's other things. It's not just sort of whiz-bang features. It's also, for example, I don't know if you've ever taken a photo where someone's been standing, you know, in front of a window, and so the window is relatively bright, and what happens is that the face of the person goes into shadow. Mm-hmm. And you've either got the choice of having the face of the person in shadow or the image in the window completely washed out, so you can't see the clouds and everything because it's now too bright because you had to expose for the face. With this really powerful processor, what it can do is take every dot in the picture, work out what each part of the picture is and how it should be correctly exposed. So you can correctly expose the window and the face and everything else in the image. That's what's called high dynamic range. And it's something that no conventional camera could do, because usually, you know, you have to take an average reading or a spot reading and say, this is how much light I want coming in. But this is different. It will just expose each pixel individually in real time, and it can do it with video as well as still photography. So I would say, you know, if you've got the budget for it, then go for the Google Pixel 6.
Right. Okay. Nice. Good suggestion. I like that. And I guess, there's a lot of sort of like touch-up stuff there that's useful personally, right? We're not editing Bond with that kind of software. But I guess increasingly, a lot of the sort of like actual professional, either professional photographers or news reports even or whatever else are done really effectively via an iPhone, right? Or a Google Pixel thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all sorts of things. So in terms of photography, first of all, it's getting harder for professionals to tell the difference. So there's a thing called bokeh, which is very popular in sort of photography and cinematography, where the foreground is sharp and the background is blurred, and it's meant to draw your attention to the subject of the picture. And
that, yeah, I mean, I can do that.
Yeah, and that normally needs conventionally a wide aperture lens, but with this, it will do it electronically, and it's getting better and better at doing it. So even a trained eye is sometimes struggling to tell the difference between a £3,000 digital SLR and a high-end smartphone picture. There are certain things where it still can't do, but those things are becoming more and more niche. And the argument against smartphones as cameras is becoming less and less. If you're thinking of, you know, shooting video, then, you know, it has the benefit even then. It will do 4K video at 60 frames a second, which is quite remarkable. And then you can do things where you can actually pull focus on it after you've shot it, so you can actually change the focal length. Yeah, so you know, Apple sort of made a big deal of that sort of feature in its new iPhone 13s, and it's just quite remarkable because it seems like photography is just going to take this big leap forward. You know, just as, you know, film photography went into digital photography, now we're heading into this computational photography where the processors are so smart that they can alter the picture in real time to make it better than that hardware has any right to produce.
Yeah, wow. I'm very impressed by that. I've just taken, that wasn't the sound effect, by the way. I've just literally taken the picture.
did you catch my good side on the ISDM?
I did. It's lovely. I've just got a picture, obviously, here. We're in different studios. But it's wonderful. It's really great. I mean, I've don't use the portrait mode on iPhone much, but I know I'm only sort of looking at it on an iPhone screen. I guess if you blow it up, you lose a bit of quality, and the better the screen, I guess, it changes slightly. But I mean, it is absolutely great. I mean, you really genuinely cannot tell the difference between that and something that I could take. I've got a DSLR at home, and you know, I mean, yeah, it's different in lots of ways, but it's a hell of a lot closer than it's ever been.
It is, and you know, there's also that saying that the best camera is the one that you've got with you. You've got your DSLR at home. It's not going to take
exactly.
It's not going to take a good picture in your studio right now, is it? But you've got your smartphone with you, and that's also the point, you know. But and it's got a gorgeous screen on it as well. So you know, if you're shooting video and so forth, they are just incredible, and the image stabilization on them is getting smarter and smarter. So gimbals are less necessary than they were. You know, these devices where you've got three axes where it sort of corrects as you walk and bounce around, that it corrects for the motion. The phone itself can do a better and better job of that. And I was actually, I personally was just thinking about, okay, do I buy an iPhone 13 Pro Max, or do I spend half the money of that on a decent APS-C camera, which is a sort of decent size sensor in a compact size camera. But that's all it'll do. It won't do the other stuff, and it won't do that. Because the conventional cameras better watch out, because if they don't get their act together and start introducing faster processors and the computational aspects, which is hard, because that's not just... They are in danger of becoming the best horse and carriage you can buy. You know, they make really good horse and carriages, but they're not in the horse and carriage game. They're in the transportation game, and if they fail to keep up, that you know, they'll go the way of Kodak if they're not careful. Yeah.
That's a really good analogy, that horse and cart analogy. Just while we're on the issue of phones, by the way, we've had a cracker from Dermot. He says, "How would the depression detector feature work on an iPhone, and are they still working on that?" So, what is that?
A depression. So there's two possible meanings for that. I assume we're talking about the human form of depression rather than how hard you're pressing on a screen. Okay, a depression detector. It's quite interesting because software is being developed into smartphones that can detect, particularly the early stages of all sorts of illnesses, including depression, multiple sclerosis, dementia, all sorts of illnesses. So, for example, with MS, there is software that can be built into everyone's smartphone that can detect the very early micro trembles in the hand, and also the slight trembling of the voice. But we're talking about very subtle effects that human beings wouldn't notice, but a software with built-in in a phone with built-in gyroscopes and so forth can notice those things, and it can spot the early signs. It can also spot the early signs of cognitive dysfunction, and that's really important because in terms of dementia, the disease in the brain can often go on for years or decades before people realize that that's what's happening, and it's likely to be the case that if you can spot it earlier, you've got a chance of reversing it and even introducing lifestyle changes that could either reverse it or slow it down. You know, because it is quite interesting. Some people, for example, when they die and their brains are autopsied, if indeed they are, they find that there is advanced stage dementia in the brain, but that it wasn't noticeable on the outside yet. It's quite interesting. There are... this thing's called beta amyloid, which is a chemical that's normally washed away. The reason why you need 8 hours good sleep, by the way, and I'm sorry to say this to you because you're obviously working late, but the reason why you need that is when you lie down flat, spinal fluid washes away certain things from the brain that need to be washed away every night, and that process takes about 8 hours, and you need to be horizontal for it to work properly. And if you do not wash them away, one of the theories of types of dementia is that this beta amyloid chemical forms into hard plaques, and those plaques interfere with the communication between brain cells. And one of the defenses against that is to learn lots, to read lots, to keep your mind active, and what you're doing is you're forming many neural pathways. So if some of them get blocked, you've got a lot of redundancy, which is why some people with quite diseased brains, when it comes to forms of dementia, can actually still be perfectly functional from the outside because they're using their redundant capacity that they've built. So it's really important. Things like reading novels is thought to be very good. You know, the ability to follow characters, fairly complex storylines and so forth, is thought to be good for the brain.
Oh, my gosh. My producer Mark has just buzzed saying, God, this is very depressing for somebody who is sleep-deprived. Because Mark works late and overnights. Those who listen to Martin Kellner from Warn will hear Mark on the show regularly. He's a through-the-nighter. But no, you're right. I mean, and actually that is, and sort of, I guess, just on the tech thing, you know, having tech that can help us with that sort of stuff.
Well, it is interesting.
Is really valuable.
I use a gadget which I love, and I have to say, I've been a night bird since I was a teenager, and you know, I try to mitigate it, but you know, some of us, I guess, are that way. But there's lots of gadgets now that try to measure our sleep, the amount of sleep we get, and the quality of sleep. Most of those are on wristwatches that you have to wear, and they're not ideal, particularly because if it's on your wristwatch, when are you going to charge your wristwatch? Because if it's a smartwatch, like an Apple Watch, for example, which is excellent, you know, you've got it on during the day. If you now have to wear it during the night as well,
yeah, good point.
That begs the question. So what I use is something called a Withings Sleep Analyzer. So Withings is a French company. It was part of Nokia Medical for a while, that Nokia bought it, but I think there was a culture clash and they bought themselves back out again. And they produce really highly functional smart watches, smart scales, and this sleep analyzer. And it's like a little mat. Imagine something that's, I guess, about 4 inches wide and about 18 inches long. It's a mat that sort of unfurls, and it just slips underneath your mattress. And what it does, and it's got little microphones in it and so forth. And what it does is it detects a number of things. It detects, you know, obviously, when you're in the bed, how long it takes you to fall asleep, how long you sleep, when you wake up, how long it takes you to get out of bed. But more importantly, it detects the quality of your sleep. Is that light sleep, deep sleep, or REM sleep, which is rapid eye movement sleep for when you're dreaming? The restorative forms of sleep that, you know, we talked about earlier about, you know, washing the brain and all of that, as opposed to brain washing, are deep sleep and REM. and that, so you could, you, some people have, you know, many hours of light sleep, think they've had a good night's sleep, but they haven't really had the restorative sleep that their bodies need. It also now, what I love about these gadgets is they actually get new features as the software is improved. The same hardware can do new things. So now it can detect sleep apnea. So sleep apnea is where a good proportion of the population stop breathing during their sleep for, you know, short periods throughout the night.
Yeah.
And that's kind of serious because the body's not getting enough oxygen, the brain is not getting enough oxygen if that happens. People often who are overweight, people who snore, these are often indicators for people who may suffer from sleep apnea. And normally, you know, you'd have to persuade your doctor to send you for a sleep study in a hospital to get a full workup. And you know, there just aren't the resources to do that for most people. And particularly for people who sleep alone, you know, who haven't got a spouse in the bed with them who's going to say, you know, something funny is going on because you're stopping breathing. People don't die. Yeah. What happens is a person who stops breathing in their sleep, they start to come into the last stage before they're fully conscious, which restarts their breathing. So they're not aware of it ever happening. And yet people could stop breathing, you know, several times. And it's linked to all sorts of heart disease like arrhythmias and stuff like that. So it is not the reason why it's not depressing, Daryl, is this. If you know it's happening, you can do something about it. People can lose weight. They can change their lifestyle. Some people, for example, have it only when they're lying on their back, but not on their side. So if you know that, lie on your side. You know, it can be as simple as that. And, you know, it's really useful because, as I say, that sort of thing, the starvation of oxygen for the body and the brain is not good. And it can lead to cognitive dysfunction. It can lead to heart problems as well. So it's really good to know because it's completely treatable. You know, it doesn't have to be that way, but you have to know. And it's part of a trend now where our technology, our watches, other wearable technology, and, you know, these other devices, the trend is that they're moving more and more into health. You know, so when Apple launched the Apple Watch, it didn't really have a health focus in the beginning. But if, particularly if you look just in the last few weeks, Apple is hiring a lot of health experts from different companies in, and the Apple Watch and this, you know, the iPhone and other devices are becoming much more health orientated. And the trend is this, that these devices, as we go forward and they get better, are going to monitor our health. They're going to look for signs of problems before we even know there are problems. We will be able to send scans of our heart and so forth. We can already do that to our doctor. But you can just have your health monitored constantly in a way that doesn't interrupt you, you know, and can just pick up illnesses which are just beginning before they become really problematic.
Just sort of doing it in the background. And I guess if you're waiting for a certain thing to happen to your body that is the trigger for you going to the GP, or that is the, you know, your body telling you that there's a problem, if tech can tell you that there's a problem before your body does, I mean, that's a bit of a game changer, isn't it, in terms of getting some of those things sorted. Listen, we're going to take a break. Hold that thought just for a second. We'll come back. We've also got a cracking question. Talk about phones and such. Cracking question about an iOS 15 update. Also, a brilliant question about virtual reality to come to, and tech for older people as well. The Gadget Detective is with you on Talk Radio tonight. Okay, Fevzi, got another question here. From no name on this one, actually, but it's a really good one about iOS. We've just been talking about phones and such. This question said, I'm thinking about upgrading to iOS 15, but I've been bitten before, as the early releases tend to be buggy. Should I upgrade now or hold off? So is iOS 15,
that's the new Apple operating software. System. Yeah, so there's iOS 15 for iPhones and iPad OS 15 for iPads, and they're very similar. They're sort of the same generation. Well, look, I make a point of, because of what I do, I make a point of updating all devices straight away so that I can start to report on problems. And the things that I've seen with iOS 15 that I don't like, and I would counsel people maybe just to hold on a little bit longer, is it doesn't happen to everyone, but a number of iPhone users have had their mail app messed up by this, so their email application. Whereas it was working perfectly well before, and it happens on I had it on an iPhone 7 Plus, which was, you know, is an older machine, but it was working perfectly well under iOS 14.8.1, which was the latest version before this. What seems to happen is a lot of people, then they do a sort of send and receive, and it's trying to update and download the new emails. It just gets stuck. And something that would take a few seconds before can take a minute or more. It can lock up, and then you have to close the app and restart it. You do get your email in the end, but they, you know, having looked online, having suffered it on that machine, I noticed that there is a, you know, a reasonable number of people who are reporting identical problems. And Apple, bless their hearts, don't tend to own up to problems, and even when they fix them, they don't often tell you that they've fixed them. You just find that one day it works. But I've known certain Apple bugs to be in their iOS for getting on for 10 years, and they still haven't fixed it across the generations, and it is quite amazing. So I would say, particularly because Apple has shown a willingness to do security updates to iOS 14, it's done 14.8.1, I would say hold on. We've got we're on 15.1 at the moment. You know, we're 15.2 is in the second beta stage, which means that it will be with us soon. I would wait and just do some research online. You can if you're not sure if it's all clear yet, you can get me on Twitter at Gadget Detective, and you can ask me, you know, in a week or in a month or 2 months time, you know, is it safe now?
Yes.
And I can give you an answer to that. But at the moment, I wouldn't put it on a device that you rely upon, you know.
Okay.
And the other thing that I've seen just on the iPads is because they've got this ability to have widgets on the homepage now, you know, these big sort of little programs that run, you know, instead of just icons that you tap, you've got widgets like weather widget and, you know, transport and stuff. It completely messes up your home screen. It changes it all. So what I would say to you is, on an iPad, before you go to iPad OS 15, do screenshots of each of your pages of icons, so you know exactly what they look like, and at least you can put them back. But even then, under iPad OS 15, when you turn it from landscape mode to portrait, in other words, the other way up, it doesn't maintain the position of all the icons. It moves them around, which is deeply irritating.
So
there are some great features in it, by the way. For example, FaceTime which used to be for Apple users only, you know, the ability to do video calls and audio calls between Apple devices, can now, people who don't own Apple equipment can now take part in a FaceTime call. And it works a bit like Zoom. So the FaceTime user sends a link to the non-Apple user, and they can then access it through their browser. And that's a really nice feature.
Yeah.
They've also got something called SharePlay, which allows you during a FaceTime call to share a video. So, you know, if you're stuck through COVID or just, you know, remote from people that you care about, you can have movie night over FaceTime, which is kind of fun.
That's nice, isn't it? That's very nice, very helpful at the moment. Okay, and look, we've got two more questions to get through here. So brief answers, which I know is really hard when we're talking about technology, and you and I love it, so we can talk forever about it. But this is a good question here from Tony, who says, if I fancy going giving virtual reality a go, but don't want to blow the bank, where should I start? So if I fancy giving virtual reality a go, but don't want to blow the bank, where should I start?
Depends how much you care about your privacy. So if you want good value for money, reasonable quality, you don't need to have a really powerful computer to attach it to, then you can buy a headset branded Oculus. That said, Oculus was bought by Facebook in 2014, and it's part of their forward thinking for this metaverse idea that they've announced recently. And you have to link it to a Facebook account. And it's just another way in which Facebook can track you through, you know, 3D space. So I personally don't use it for that reason, because I'm not a great fan of Facebook's what's laughingly called their privacy policy. So I don't do that. You could look at a company called HTC that actually produce some of the better headsets, but aren't a social network. So I would look at what they produce. Sony also have some headsets, and as do Microsoft, linked to their various products. But I'd suggest having a look at the HTC stuff. Just know that it's a nascent technology. It's not a fully developed technology. There's two types of these VR helmets, in essence. There's the ones that attach to a powerful computer, and in the end, they give you the best quality and most flexibility. But you need a really high-end PC to run it with, and there's one where all the smarts are built into it. It's got the effectively the gubbins of a smartphone built into it, with proper screens for the eyes and speakers for the ears and so forth. Okay. And they're convenient. So that's it.
Okay. Good. That's brilliant. Really comprehensive. Very comprehensive. Okay. Rich is in Leeds. Hi, Rich. He says, hello. I've got an iPad Air 2, which works absolutely fine, but the battery life isn't great. I'd rather pay £100 to get a new battery fitted than splash out on a new iPad, but I'm worried that this could be a false economy. Is the iPad Air 2 likely to become obsolete with the introduction of a new iOS anytime soon?
Yes.
So battery false economy, obsolete iOS is...
I wouldn't... Yeah, it's a bit of a borderline case, an iPad Air 2. I would not put £100 towards that, because you can buy a brand new basic iPad, which will be faster than the Air 2, for about £300, and it'll be warrantied, and it'll be faster, and it'll have more memory. Because it's not just a question of will it run the new iOS, or iPad OS, that's true, but also will it run it well? Yeah, the cameras are improved with each generation. The amount of memory they have, both for storage and for running programs in, improves. I would say use the iPad Air 2 until you can't use it anymore, until it's obsoleted. Then sell it, or use it for a specific purpose. You know, use it for recipes in your kitchen, or as a second screen for, you know, your kids on journeys or something like that. Or sell it, put it towards a new one. But you know, the technology is improving so rapidly. I would rather take the £100 and put it towards a new one, personally.
Okay. Good answer. Janie says, gadget expert. Yes. My father has Parkinson's, she says. I recently visited his house with Alexa. He can now switch lights on and off by voice command and can see the CCTV, make phone calls, open his door, etc., all from the comfort of his chair. It's giving him a new lease of life and an independence. Why is the disability and age market so neglected?
It's a very good question. I mean, I think it's a huge market, and there are companies waking up to this. I think the onset of COVID and the need for us to watch our elderly relatives, keep an eye on them remotely, and also to video call with them changed a lot. One of the problems was how to configure these devices. You know, normally you'd have a person in the house, you know, setting it up for that person. But when there was COVID shielding, that became difficult. Look, this is a big area, and it's going to become more important. We've talked about health monitoring and stuff, and that's important for all age groups, but I would say particularly for older people. There are all sorts of technologies. There's fall detection built into smartphones and watches now. So if a person falls, again, doesn't have to be old, but if they fall, it's in there. I think Apple's about to build car crash detection into its devices, so it will detect the sound and the sudden change of velocity and so forth, and call the emergency services. So these sorts of things are happening, but it is happening. But I just think, you know, the technology is not very friendly at the moment. It's getting better, and therefore hasn't the older market hasn't been the ideal market for, you know, setting up and using some of these devices. But as they become more sophisticated and easier to use, they will just like be talking to another person, yeah, in terms of setting them up and using them. And that's the joy of it. And the Alexas are great. I think the only thing I'd say about them, again, there are privacy concerns with these things. But sometimes utility can be more important than privacy if someone is vulnerable.
And I suppose I sort of like hesitate to say this, really, but I wonder if there is something about the fact that, you know, the older you get, the less of a legacy customer you'd likely become, or if you're disabled, you perhaps are only using a certain type of technology. That for technology companies, they're looking to capture a market who are going to spend, keep spending, keep upgrading, keep pumping money into their system.
Well, I mean, if you look at the demographics, we're an aging population, so therefore that group is growing. And secondly, they tend to, that age group tends to have more disposable income than younger people, funnily enough.
Yeah, it's a mad dichotomy, that, isn't it? For some reason, the generation or the section of society with the most disposable income are the least targeted or the least catered for things.
Well, I would say
I've never figured that one out.
I would say the least catered for, because the tech isn't yet, well, it is becoming, but it hasn't been good enough so far to be usable well by that target group. It's been too complicated. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying that old people cannot manage. It tends to go with things like, you know, visual and audio problems as well. You know, hearing and eyesight and coordination and things, you know, tend to go as we get older. But that's not to say that there aren't many older people who are absolutely whizzes with their technology. I'm not suggesting that. But if you're looking at the people who've maybe got, you know, hearing problems or eyesight problems or coordination problems or cognitive problems, then the technology has to be really good to allow that user to interact with it. And of course, the ultimate incarnation of that is an AI embodied in your home that will respond to you like a human personal assistant. And by the way, that is the future of care for the elderly as well. The problem with this huge elderly population and fewer younger people to become carers, even if they wanted to, paid or unpaid, will eventually be solved by AI in robot form and within the fabric of a house as well.
Yeah, you can imagine it sort of taking on some of that burden, can't you? Listen, we're out of time, but such a joy. What a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
Where can people find your stuff, just very briefly?
Yeah, so on Twitter, if you've got any questions that we didn't get to, at Gadget Detective. And if you want to find out what I do other times, www.gadgetdetective.com.
Brilliant. Good stuff. Fevzy, the Gadget Detective, with us on Talk Radio tonight. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your questions as well. Lots of good, deep, thorough answers there.